dangerous neighborhood.
The only podcast supplement that guaranteed to increase your lack of libido. This week we delve into news that isn't all related to the San Diego Comic-Con, review a brew, and try to figure out what white space is. Which isn't nearly as racist as this week's sponsor, Post Cereal.
Vroom, vroom, vroom. Today, so I have exciting story to tell about beautiful new Ford Mustang car.
Chinese impersonation with offensive caricature. Check.
And inside car, boy and mother and shopping bag. And inside bag, box of Post Rice Crinkles. And inside box of Post Rice Crinkles?
It's like a nesting doll of racism.
Wow, Mom. Boy, oh boy. There's a Mustang car inside the Rice Krinkles.
And the grocer was inside of Mommy. What's your point?
Oh, no, dear. The Rice Krinkles are inside our Mustang.
But there is a Mustang inside the Rice Krinkles.
Well, the grocer was a stallion.
Oh, there is a Mustang inside the Rice Krinkles.
A Mustang, just like ours.
And so, sugary Rice Krinkles give happy ending to story.
That's the cheapest she ever paid for a happy ending.
Boy, get Mustang. Mm. You do too, inside Post Rice Krinkles. Collect them all, convertible, hardtop, and...
Orientalism.
Fastback, race with your friends. You go vroom vroom when you get Mustang car free inside Post Rice Krinkles.
That's Post Cereal because Kellogg's doesn't have a monopoly on batshit crazy.
And now the news.
So with the West Coast Avenger Greg breaking down the San Diego Comic-Con experience and culture, and Drew and John and Stacy breaking down their favorite trailers, I'm going to look at some of the most neglected things of all Comic-Cons nowadays. The comics! Believe it or not, there have been some news revolving around actual comic books that involves Marvel and DC. I know, right? So this news segment, I will pick out some of the more interesting tidbits. Are you ready for Secret Empire to come to an end? I know I am, and Marvel Legacy is the vehicle of an event to do it. It will also be introducing a series of major new storylines for many of its characters, which comes with big changes. Here are a few that we know about already. 1. Jane Foster might be out of time, both in terms of being four and simply being alive. The new storyline for The Mighty Thor is ominously titled, The Death of Mighty Thor. Peter Parker will be losing his billionaire status and his Parker Industries company, sending him slinking back to the Daily Bugle for a storyline that reestablishes the classic down-on-his-luck version of the character. Oh boy. Tony Stark will be revived from his Captain Marvel-induced coma, which I thought he was in Secret Empire, but that is a dream or something, I stopped caring, and then promptly run off somewhere, necessitating his two Iron Man successors, you know, Dr. Doom and Riri Williams, coming together to find him. Boy, I can't wait to grab that. After years in the spotlight as one of Marvel's most popular characters have softened his edge, Deadpool is returning to the more ambiguous mercenary lifestyle as Despicable Deadpool. Yeah, I might actually enjoy that. Speaking of which, although Spider-Man Deadpool is continuing, the new antagonistic bent on Deadpool is turning into Spider-Man versus Deadpool as the two allies' relationship turns sour. With Secret Empire leading Sam Wilson to step away from Captain America for good, he's returning to his roots as the Falcon in his own ongoing series. Steve Rogers himself is presumably shaken by the months he spent as a fascist head of a Hydra-run U.S., he is pulling a 2010-era Superman and taking a trip across America to reacquaint himself with how the average American sees Captain America. Not a Nazi! Captain America is not a Nazi! One underlying mystery about Legacy, with all of its talk of bringing back the glory days of Marvel, is just how the Fantastic Four could fit into the whole thing. After all, they're icons of classic Marvel, and the team itself has been absent from comics altogether for the past few years, thanks to Sue and Reed being off rebuilding Marvel Multiverse after Secret Wars. Hey, you know, Val and Franklin have been learning a lot in their experience. They're just being scientists, they're just having fun. Sue's playing an unbeatable game of hide and seek. Legacy was announced with the tease for the beloved Marvel mainstay making its return, which had lead fans to wonder if Sue and Reed will reunite with Johnny Storm and Ben Grimm. Marvel has been hinting at the legacy of the Fantastic Four being part of its new roster update, although that really hasn't amounted to much yet. The announcement of several storylines and series for Legacy using homages to classic Marvel covers was littered with new takes on classic Fantastic Four covers. One of them even involved announcement of a new relaunch of the Marvel 2-in-1 team-up series featuring the Human Torch and the Thing together in an FF-inspired costumes. But so far, it's consisted of only teases, and some even turned out to be Mr. X, like the Fantastic Three storyline, and ultimately ended up being for Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, rather than anything to do with the actual Fantastic Four. But at some point, all this teasing has to get amount to something, right? Right? God, I hate you, Marvel. But Marvel isn't having all the stupid, I mean, fun. DC has some announcements, too. The first year of Young Animal, Gerard Way's pop-up imprint from DC Entertainment, is going to end in a genuinely unexpected way. The finale will bring the skewed characters from Doom Patrol, Shade the Changing Girl, Mother Panic, and Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye into the very first comic book crossover, not only with each other, but also with the heroes of mainstream DC comic book universe. Way announced the four-issue storyline during the Young Animal panel Friday evening at San Diego Comic-Con, revealing that each series will have a one-off special issue on January 2018 that will feature their characters crossing over with mainstream DC property, beginning with Doom Patrol Special, co-written by Way and Justice League of America and Friend of the Court, writer Steve Orlando, featuring the JLA. Art for the special will come with Orlando's Midnight collaborator, ACO. Information on the other three special issues will be released in the coming months. According to Way, although he did tease that each series will change in some way as a result of their particular mainstream crossover. Seems like anytime DC publisher Dan DiDio is involved in Comic-Con panel, he's always got something up his sleeve, even at the end of the day. As if the DC Masterclass panel wasn't stacked enough with world-class comic artist talent, Amanda Conder, Greg Capullo, Tony Daniel, Andy Kubrick, Jim Lee, and John Romita Jr., another unexpected guest stopped by, comic book legend Frank Miller. I think he's not a misogynist anymore. I'm not sure, though. Fresh off of his completion with Batman The Dark Knight Master Race, Miller thought he'd come chill with his friends as they talked about Dan and their first forays into comics, as well as their various upcoming projects for Dark Knight's Metal and Dark Matter, and other upcoming books. Frank didn't want to feel left out, so he decided to up the ante, revealing some news of his own, that he's got a new DC title in the works, and he revealed concept art for the projects he's really excited about. Superman Year One. At Comic-Con this year, Dan DiDio moderated panels have given fans the following exclusive news. Grant Morrison and Wonder Woman Earth 1 Volume 2 and Arkham Asylum 2, new Dark Matter titles, and Jeff Lemire's return to DC, and two new titles from one of the greatest writers in the comic book history. The moral of the stories? Always keep your eyes open for panel moderated by Dan. You never know what you might find out.
Well, class, today is career day, so we'll be hearing from your parents and learn about what they do for a living. Except you, Link. You don't have parents. Unless you want to bring that tree in. Do you want to bring a tree in?
Go to hell!
Right. Then let's get started.
In virtual assistant's virtually non-existent news review, Bixby is almost kinda fully released. And it is even worse than I was expecting, and my expectations were really low. Now I have a Samsung Galaxy S8, and my Bixby button has annoyed me since I got the phone on its release. It was a waste of space and occasionally got pressed by accident. Which wasn't a big problem because I really didn't do anything other than bring up a crappy start screen. Now that there's an actual AI behind the button, everything just got more annoying. Not only that, Samsung has locked the use of that superfluous button to use only Bixby, so my dreams of having an actual camera button have been dashed. What is even worse is that Bixby can't open up every app, or even the majority of apps. Hell, I only had it work with Samsung apps like their crappy Messenger app, which I don't actually use. Now to be fair, this will get better with time. But how much time? Siri, Cortana, and Alexa are heads and tails better, and Alexa is by far superior, and it just came out last year. Here's what's even more terrifying. Samsung plans on using Bixby for their Internet of Things devices, dishwashers, refrigerators, and televisions. I can't wait for Bixby to tell me that my dryer needs a software update to run.
Particon, I've got a problem. To disable Nuke, I need 3 key cards, but all I have is this one.
That's just the trick, Snake. You already have all 3 cards. It's made of a shape memory alloy. It's a material that changes shape at different temperatures. Room temperature, warm, and cold.
Okay, I've entered the first card. Now what?
Heat it up, Snake. Find a warm place. No, Snake. Think harder.
In speaking of better virtual assistants news, Microsoft has unveiled their latest Internet of Things device that they crammed Cortana into. And it's not Spartan 4 armor. Yet. It's a thermostat. Microsoft Glass. That's capital G, capital L, capital A, capital S. Not sure if it's an acronym like Xbox One X, but it does look cool. The slick-looking control packs both translucent touchscreen and, more importantly, Cortana voice controls. You don't need to have to talk to a speaker on your phone to change the temperature. The promo video doesn't go deep into the feature set, but the Windows 10 LOT core-based hardware, Azure, is known to detect both your presence in the room as well as air quality indoors and outdoors. As for the launch details, neither Microsoft nor Johnson Controls have said anything at this point, but it's safe to say that it will come at more than your average home climate controller. I mean, it has to be competitive with Nest, right? Let's just hope it arrives in a reasonable time frame. Smart home devices like this were expected following the launch of Microsoft's Cortana Skills Kit back in May. The company wants Cortana and other Windows 10 technologies to be as ubiquitous as your appliances as they are in your computers. However, the capital G, capital L, capital A, capital S unveiling gives us a better idea what this vision looks like in practice beyond Harman Kardon's speaker, smart speaker that they released at, I think it was CES this year. At least some manufacturers of the Cortana-capable devices will try to beat out rivals like Nest with advanced features and exotic designs that you will rarely see elsewhere. Microsoft has been innovating over the past few years, and it's been good, and it's beginning to look like they're slowing down. I mean, the Surface Book didn't totally wow me. But maybe we'll see an explosion of devices! Or maybe we'll get half-assed support like they did with the Windows Phone. Damn it, Microsoft.
The Poles, they drink it kinda warm. The Nordics drink it from a horn. The Germans drink it from a stein. The Irish drink it all the time. A lager, bitter, porter, or an ale. Hefeweizen or a pale. Double, triple, or a stout. If it's a light beer, pour it out.
In Porter, I Damn Near Killed Her reviews, I am drinking yet another brew this week by one of my favorite collaborative operations. Danish Evil Twin Brewing and American Two Roads Brewing have come up with their second concoction from their Two Evil line. Pachamama! Two Roads and Evil Twin have paid homage to Incan heritage by using 3 Peruvian staple foods in this porter. Sweet potatoes, purple maize, and Aji Panca chili peppers. The name is derived from the goddess revered by the indigenous people of the Andes. She is known as the Earth Mother in Inca mythology. Given that the main ingredients of this 6.5 alcohol by volume porter come at a rich Peruvian soil, the two breweries thought the name Pachamama fit this product beautifully. It has a Beer Advocate rating of 83, which is high for a porter since Beer Advocate is mainly populated by hopheads like me who enjoy punching themselves in the taste buds. That's not to say that this isn't really good, because it is. It does tend to gush with a fast rising head upon opening, or maybe have a sifter ready at hand. Pours near black, but not opaque, with ruby brown edges. It has a moderate sized tan head and dissipates quickly, leaving behind just traces on the surface of a thin ring around the edge of the sniffer, but some lacing upon tilting the glass. It has a complex and appealing smell, with hints of exotic spices, black bread, chili peppers, and cocoa. In the flavor department, that pronounced cocoa smell in the aroma doesn't translate to the bold flavor of cocoa, which I'm kind of glad for. You definitely feel and taste the chili peppers on contact, but it does not linger. What does linger are the notes of cocoa and dark bread. It's mildly bitter overall and has a rather dry finish. Overall, I rate this beer an 8 out of 10 Los Machu Picchu tourist.
Hey, said it's that time of the year to celebrate beer, so why don't you try something new? I'm willing to bet that you won't regret sampling these handcrafted brews. I was embracing the taste and the flavor. I was admiring the malt and the hops. And with each beer I tried, it expanded my mind. And finally the penny had dropped.
Man, I can't wait to see what this damn wheel will make me talk about this week. All right, let's give it a spin. Okay, I'm actually kind of interested in this. The wheel says, explain what white space is. Now, before you turn this off thinking you're listening to some white nationalist with ties to the Trump White House perpetuating a new kind of Lebensraum, white space actually refers to the bandwidths of radio waves we are currently not using anymore. These bandwidths are now fallow, just waiting to be taken advantage of. This past week, if you read a lot of economics and tech news like I do, you notice Microsoft talking about bringing broadband internet to rural America. This, of course, piques the interest of investors for multiple reasons. First, broadband tends to be an infrastructure problem that needs a lot of upfront investment followed by the occasional maintenance. That has been the reason most telecoms tell their customers why broadband is so shitty and slow in the US. It is, of course, more complex than that, and I could get back into talking about net neutrality. But I already did that once, so I'll press on. The real reason is that it never really is cost-effective. While rural America looks big when you see red on the map of the 2016 election, it is sparsely populated and not usually filled with those of the technologic inclination. Investing in that was a dead end, unless you could be certain that the population centers might build up around booming industries like fracking. Way back in 2011, Microsoft saw this as an opportunity. Full power analog television broadcast, which operated between the 54 MHz and 806 MHz television frequencies, that's channels 2 through 69, 69, ceased operating on June 12, 2009, as per the United States digital switchover mandate. At that time, full power TV stations were required to switch to digital transmission and operate only between 54 MHz and 698 MHz. This is also the timetable that the White Space Coalition set up to begin offering wireless broadband services to consumers. The delay allows time for the United States Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, to test technology to make sure that it does not interfere with existing television broadcast. Similar technologies could be used worldwide, as much of the core technology is already in place. Theatrical producers and sports franchises hope to derail or delay the decision, arguing that their own transmissions, whether from television signals or from wireless microphones used in live music performances, could face interference from new devices that used white spaces. However, the FCC rejected their argument, saying enough testing has been done, and through new regulations, possible interference will be minimized. More of the broadcast spectrum was needed for wireless broadband internet access, and in March 2009, Massachusetts Senator John Kerry introduced a bill requiring a study of efficient use of the spectrum. Academics have studied the matter and promoted the idea using computing technology to capture the benefits of white space. While we are here in America have been studying, Europe has moved past us. They have already ditched VHF a long time before us, and they never really used UHF. One of the challenges that a sophisticated infrastructure is necessary to ensure white space transmissions don't impact neighboring broadcasters. This is a real-time requirement. What is fine after sundown may not be the next morning. Microsoft has grown tired of waiting for consensus and instead will try to implement white space super Wi-Fi in areas where there is little get in the way of the signal, rural America. Microsoft is proposing a $10 billion white space project that would connect 23.4 million rural Americans. The five-year program would combine corporate donations and matching federal and state grants. This would end up being the new 5G. 5G ushers in an era which wireless and wired approaches more or less on a level playing field. Fixed versions of this technology will come first because they are easily, technically, Roaming and miniaturization challenges can be left for another day. Serendipitously, the earlier use of the technology has a strong business case of its own. Carriers can learn and develop while generating revenue. So they think. White space is more modest endeavor than fixed 5G wireless. However, this is a monumental advantage. Much of the technical challenge of 5G involves harnessing a very high millimeter frequencies. They are short range and easily disrupted by things in the environment, from rain and fog to furniture and walls. Conversely, the broadcast spectrum used by white space is a beachfront property of the radio spectrum. It's big, large, and goes through everything. That's why it was used for broadcast in the first place. This makes it a really big deal. This is good news for people in rural areas. Differentiated services will vie for market share. In some cases, they will compete directly. If this works, Microsoft just made a huge leap over Google's fiber lines, which have been slow rolling out and will only serve large metro areas. If it doesn't work, well, Microsoft is great at wasting money. Right, Nokia? Thanks for stopping by this week to Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. If you ever wondered what kind of D&D character your Court of Nerds friends would be, check out the list I posted on thecourtofnerds.com. It's accurate. I'm Kevin from the Court of Nerds saying, people have the right to be stupid, and I abuse that privilege. Bye.